KALW.
You know, we're doing on average over 3,200 meals a day. There was one day we served over 3,800 meals, which is more than ever in our 70-year history.
Tents in the Tenderloin have tripled since the beginning of the coronavirus. We'll hear an update from people on the ground.
And it's tiring. It's really tiring. You really need to come every morning and for people to come up to you and be like, Shai, what's going on? Why am I not in a hotel room right now? And I'm like, I don't know.
We'll learn about the city's new neighborhood plan. Then we'll go to one of the best smelling spots in San Francisco.
The Princess Anne has like all the scent. You can smell it just walking by. Go give it a whiff.
Stopping to smell the roses. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Nearly 8 weeks after Mayor London Breed announced San Francisco's shelter-in-place ordinance, today the city's opening its first so-called safe sleeping site. It's in between the Asian Art Museum and the main library, right in front of City Hall. It's a spot where the city's unhoused residents will be able to set up camp 6 feet apart from others and access showers and bathrooms. It's one of the only places where the city's most vulnerable residents can safely socially distance. But homeless advocates say this response is coming way too late. KALW's Angela Johnston has an update.
Shai Brown was homeless in the Tenderloin off and on for 13 years, but recently found her way into a navigation center and then permanent housing. Now, she says she finds ways to give back to her neighbors. And in the pandemic, that means getting up every morning and walking around the neighborhood, talking to people about the coronavirus.
I just basically tell people, wear your mask, wear your facial mask. You see what I'm saying? Wash your hands constantly.
There are finally more hand washing stations here now and more bathrooms. But there are also more people. She says in the past month alone, the amount of tents on the street has doubled, maybe tripled.
On a daily basis, there's like people coming from everywhere over here, you know, to the Tenderloin area to the point where it's congesting all the streets and everything else, you know.
And that's made it extremely difficult for her to walk up and down the street. At the beginning of the month, UC Hastings sued the city for this reason, saying the Tenderloin has gotten dangerously crowded and the city hasn't equitably intervened. They claim this creates unsanitary conditions for everyone in the neighborhood, both unhoused and housed residents, who are afraid to leave their homes to get groceries. And while crime has gone down citywide since the coronavirus, the lawsuit points out that in the Tenderloin, it's gone up. Still, Shai tries to make it to every tent or encampment to answer questions about the pandemic. But unfortunately, she says she doesn't have answers for most of the questions she gets.
And it's tiring. It's really tiring. You really need to come every morning and for people to come up to you and be like, Shai, what's going on? Why am I not in a hotel room right now? And I'm like, I don't know, you know, and it hurts me, like, in a major way, you know, because it's like when I don't have the answers and these people got to walk away from me knowing that, it just makes me feel like I'm doing this, like I'm letting people down out here, you know?
About a month ago, the Board of Supervisors unanimously passed an emergency ordinance. It required the city to secure around 8,000 hotel rooms. The majority were for unhoused individuals, regardless of their symptoms. Mayor Breed didn't sign it, and according to the Coalition on Homelessness, the city has only moved about 1,000 unhoused people into hotel rooms so far.
Here we are, you know, almost 10 weeks into it, and still moving a bit slow.
Jose Ramirez is the executive director of St. Anthony's, one of the biggest service providers in the neighborhood. He's measuring the huge increase in the Tenderloin, not necessarily by tents, but by meals.
We have, we're doing on average over 3,200 meals a day. There was one day we served over 3,800 meals, which is more than ever in our 70-year history.
To meet this demand, Ramirez says they've made some big changes in the last 2 months. They've closed off the entire 100 block of Golden Gate Avenue so people can have more space to socially distance themselves while they eat or receive counseling. They've built a conveyor belt from their kitchen so they can serve to-go containers quickly. While he says the tech sector has been notably quiet, St. Anthony's has scrambled together a Wi-Fi hub and charging stations for people to access the internet so unhoused folks can stay informed. And they've also provided fresh drinking water.
I mean, for a while up until this last week, there really was nowhere in the Tenderloin you can even have fresh water.
Then, a few days later, the city came in and installed their own fountains. Soon after UC Hastings filed that lawsuit, Mayor Breed announced a COVID-19 neighborhood safety plan for the Tenderloin. Part of it is installing those water fountains Ramirez talked about, as well as adding more bathrooms and garbage cans. The plan also considers more street closures, ensures safe passages for home and business owners, increased police presence, and educational outreach. Supervisor Hillary Ronan is a vocal critic of Breed's earlier homelessness strategy and calls this progress. She notes that the Department of Emergency Management has been walking around the neighborhood, talking to people directly about what they need.
You know, how they're doing, what their age is, what their conditions are, how they're feeling, if they're showing symptoms. If they have underlying health conditions, would they be willing to go to a hotel? What are their biggest needs right now? What are their fears?
And she says that while 2/3 of people surveyed in the Tenderloin initially said they'd take a hotel room if it was available, that number drops when it's explained that you're expected to stay in that hotel room until the shelter in place is over. Some unhoused people need to go to work or see counselors or just don't want to be alone or want to see friends and family.
So we're learning that we need different options for people based on their circumstances.
According to Mayor Breed's most recent press conference, of the nearly 2,000 confirmed cases in the city, around 8% report experiencing homelessness. And while the Board of Supervisors is still working on securing hotel rooms, they've turned some attention to safe sleeping sites, like the one that's opening in Civic Center today. Big open spaces where tents can be spaced 6 feet apart and people can use restrooms and showers and come and go as they please. An unofficial one has been operating in the Bayview for weeks now, and the city is considering more at the old Transbay Terminal site, the old McDonald's near Haight Street, and Everett Middle School on Church. In San Francisco, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
Angela is KALW's health reporter. You can find more of her stories at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Let's take a little break now and go over to Golden Gate Park. Every Wednesday, we take you there through a new podcast we've created called the Golden Gate Parkcast. It's an audio tour of the park and its attractions. Let's see where we're headed today. We just left the Shakespeare Garden in a thicket just off 9th Avenue. We're going to head back towards the north side of the park, and to get there, we'll take a circuitous route. We'll walk down a hill into the parking garage that serves the California Academy of Sciences and the DeYoung Museum. It's definitely a popular spot for families. We're not inside for long. Soon, we're back in the sprawling music concourse where little kids play, the bigger kids skate, and people of all ages act like they don't have a care in the world. This is the Golden Gate Parkcast from KALW Public Media. I'm your host, Hanat Baba. We're passing by the Japanese Tea Garden and away from traffic now. You'll hear so many different languages around here, and so many bird calls, too. We've made it to John F. Kennedy Boulevard, where our destination is just across the street. It's a garden. Sheer elegance, wild blue yonder, Lady Elsie May, Daybreaker. Although these might sound like romance novel titles, they're actually names for different species of the flower of romance, the rose. Golden Gate Park has one whole acre of land dedicated to roses. Chris Hambrick follows the scent.
This is an oasis of color and smell. It's popular among tourists and honeybees, too. Fuchsia, red, peach, yellow, and white blooms explode everywhere around me. Andy Stone, the Rose Garden supervisor, tells me more.
The Rose Garden is divided into 64 beds, each with a different variety of rose, usually 12 roses to a bed. And then there's the beds on the side that have the climbers and the old-fashioned roses.
The garden's been around since 1961. That's when the American Rose Society's San Francisco chapter went looking for a space to test different varieties in a cool, moist climate. Most of the roses here are hybrids that have been donated. Before we get going on our tour, I have to ask.
What's so special about roses?
They are the queen of the flowers. They're just one of the most beautiful flowers of the garden.
We stroll across the lush lawn to get to know some of these beauties a little better. Stone stops at one of his favorites.
So this one is Julia Child, and this type of rose is called a floribunda. It has many, many flowers on each spike, and they're somewhat fragrant, but what I like most is that they bloom so heavily. They bloom very heavily, they have very healthy leaves, they're not affected by very many pests.
Oh, it smells fantastic. What color would you call that? I'm saying yellow, but it's more complex than that.
Oh, it's gold. It's a golden color. It's kind of buttery. Julia liked so much butter on everything, so this, I think of Julia's buttery chicken with this one.
Speaking of butter, I noticed the other roses that remind me of food, like the cherry parfait. It's a white rose with red-edged petals, while the rainbow sorbet is a golden flower with red-orange blush on the tips. For our next stop, Stone takes us to the area where climbing roses wind around lattice borders.
This is a very old rose called Rosa eglantine, and that would be grown in England on the old castles or in Ireland growing up over the castles, and it grows quite tall. I'd almost like to let it go up and climb up the redwood trees. This one here is a briar rose, and it makes nice big rose hips, and these are sometimes actually used for jam.
This one looks like tissue paper. What's that one?
That's another briar rose. And it's this simple old-fashioned rose, just one row of petals, five petals.
I leave Stone to do some of my own nosing around.
Whoa. The wild blue yonder has the distinct rose smell that I love. That one might be my favorite because of the smell. Strike it rich. Oh, this one is really tall. I think it's probably called Strike It Rich because it's super gold.
I see someone with clippers. It's Stephen Childers. He's the rose gardener. And of course, he has his favorite.
Princess Anne is the second one from the front. It's a purple, older English variety of rose with a really great scent. And that's one of the reasons why I like it so much.
Surprisingly, not all roses have a scent, and during hybridization, it can fade as growers focus on taller, hardier plants.
The newer roses have a really showy display, but there's no scent to them, and that for me kind of takes away part of what makes a rose so cool, is the fragrance of it. So the Princess Anne has the nice double-double flower, and it has like all the scent. You can smell it just walking by, so that's my favorite.
Oh.
Go give it a whiff.
I smell everything I can, and the wonderful ones twice.
Polka, iceberg.
I'm Chris Hambrick, smelling the roses.
Roses typically start to blossom in mid-May, and they bloom all through the summer. Next time on the Golden Gate Park cast, we'll take a big, long walk to a place where tiny boats putter around.
My mother used to bring me out here to visit the Japanese tea garden, and as she had to pay a penalty, she had to bring me by the lake, and I saw all these old timers sailing their boats, and I became fascinated by it.
We'll take you there next time, and you can subscribe to the Golden Gate Parkcast to listen to every episode on the tour. Find it at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Bay Area authors have had to cancel launch parties and book tours because of coronavirus, so we're bringing you excerpts from their latest releases in this series called New Arrivals. San Francisco author Katie Flynn's new novel, The Companions, came out in March, and its timing is eerie.
It's about a teenage girl named Lilac who's murdered and brought back decades later as a product. A companion to a bored homeschooled child living in a quarantined San Francisco. And here's a paragraph from the first chapter of the book, when Lilac's curiosity about the outside world grows overwhelming, just before she realizes she can defy commands and go out on her own. I watch Dolly at school, watch her exercise, watch her shop and socialize on the screen. She has a very structured schedule. During nap, I stare at the door half open, listening for sounds of mother. Often, she uses nap time to smoke in the bathroom. My system registers the presence of airborne toxins, though I know from past experience not to sound an alarm. But today, there is no sign of smoke, no sign of mother. I have never been past this door yet. I can see how easy it is to pass into the hallway. And mother, she is not watching. She is not here. I do not make footsteps in my whir. It is nearly below human hearing. And I want to see. Why can I not see?
That was author Katie Flynn reading from her new novel, The Companions. You can find more information on that book and more at kalw.org/newarrivals. Tune in tomorrow at 5. Since the Bay Area's shelter-in-place orders started, we've been checking in with people to see how they're coping with daily life.
So I'm going to try and call the unemployment office and see if I can get anyone to respond. I've tried probably already 5 times today. Let's try again.
Thank you for calling the Employment Development Department Unemployment Insurance Online Assistance Center. We are currently receiving more calls than we can answer and are unable to assist you at this time. Please try again later.
It's a new episode of Day by Day, KALW's Quarantine Diaries, tomorrow at 5. The Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Imran Ali Malik, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Joshua Sirotiak. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.